Listening Library presents Mr. Max, The Book of Lost Things by Cynthia Voigt. Read for you by Paul Bamer. Prologue. On a bright Sunday morning in the early years of the last century, a bellhop from the Hotel Excelsior knocked at the front door of 5 Thieves Alley, the home of William and Mary Starling, of the Starling Theatrical Company, and their son, Maximilian. The bellhop, wearing the traditional red uniform with stripes running the length of his trouser legs, and with the traditional red cap perched on his head, put a small packet into the hand of the dark-haired, hawk-nosed man who opened the door and accepted the coin offered to him for his trouble. He walked briskly off, unaware of what he had started. Chapter 1, in which a surprising invitation arrives and plans are made. William Starling carried the packet back into the dining room where his wife and son were seated. In those days, most families did their most ambitious cooking for the midday Sunday dinner, but the Starlings were theatrical, and you cannot give a good Sunday matinee on a full stomach. Therefore, Sunday breakfast was Mary's showcase meal of the week, a matter of sweet rolls and fresh juice, sausages, bacon, and thick, cheesy omelets. They ate these breakfasts at a table set with linen napkins, silver cutlery, and the good china. On Sunday mornings, the Starlings could enjoy a leisurely family meal, but when William came back into the dining room, he couldn't contain his curiosity. He pushed his unfinished plate aside. From inside the packet, he pulled 2 long envelopes, 1 small, heavy red silk bag, and 1 thick sheet of paper covered with words arranged in lines as straight as soldiers on a battlefield. He read this letter through silently. When he had finished, he looked across the table to his wife and waited, watching her. She waited, watching him. Neither of them looked at Max, who had also stopped eating but did not speak. He knew better than to interrupt the drama they were creating. William set the letter down on the table, pulled his plate close again, and picked up his fork. Patient, silent, Mary watched, waiting, until at last she burst out laughing and said, "All right, William, I give up. I'll ask if you're going to be so theatrical about it. What does the letter say?" "It says," her husband began, and filled his mouth with sausage. After he had chewed for an irritatingly long time, and swallowed, and savored the last of his orange juice, he said, in a voice that vibrated like a tuning fork, "It promises, my dearling, that a great adventure awaits us." "That's unfortunate," remarked Mary, with no more interest than if he had just told her she had toast crumbs on her chin. She rose from the table. William was not the only dramatist in the family, seeing that we have a full schedule of performances from now until... She half turned in the doorway and paused, as if to think. "I believe the middle of September, with no time for adventures."
"All right," William said. "All right, Mary. You win. Come back, sit down, and lend me your ears."
When she had done as he asked, he announced, as if he were addressing a great crowd from a great height,
"On this first day of April, the Starling Theatrical Company has received a letter from deepest India, a letter written by the Maharaja of Kashmir himself, in his own hand. The most excellent and skillful William Starling, I'm quoting now, and his most beautiful and talented wife, These are his exact words.
William Starling said, facing the letter outward and waving it gently, as if his wife and son could read moving script. He used his own voice to tell her,
"We've been invited to spend several months, or more, in Hisaraj." "In India, Mary! We've never been to India! And what do you say to that, my most beautiful and talented wife?"
She answered slowly, "I say it's very odd. Very odd indeed. What use can he have for us?"
"He wants us to create a theatre company for him, like in Elizabethan England, a troupe of actors to entertain his court and to travel among his villages, performing. He wants us to find people of talent and teach them how to act, and introduce them to plays and show them how to produce a play. He says no other Maharaja has his own theatrical company, and he'll be the first. He'll lead the way. Think of it, Mary."
Only then did he pass the paper across the table to her. Max twisted in his chair so he could read it too. The letter was written on heavy, gilt-edged paper, embossed at the top with a spiky design, like a series of upside-down V's of varying height, crowding together, even overlapping. The Maharaja offered this opportunity to the Starling Theatrical Company because, he said, he had once seen their brilliant performance of a play, the name of which he couldn't recall, in a great city, although he couldn't be certain just which of the world's great cities it had been. He had, however, remembered not only the name of the company, but also its home base, so indelible had been the impression made on him by the talented couple who were its primary actors. So that when he conceived the dream of having a theatrical company of his own, he resolved immediately to persuade them to come to his most pleasing and welcoming country, with its most lovely landscapes. He hoped they would be willing to help him undertake his proud hope. He was looking forward most blissfully to the honor of welcoming the Starlings into his most humble palace. William Starling spread butter on a cinnamon roll and smiled at his wife, whose large, wide-set, dark gray eyes danced with eagerness.
"A palace, my dearling. We will live in a Maharaja's palace. Imagine it."
His own eyes, brown as chestnuts, glowed, and his smile lit the room. Neither of them so much as glanced at Max. "They're actors," Grammy often told him, as if that explained everything. She promised him, "When you're older, it'll be different." Like most librarians and former grade school teachers, Grammy was proved right. After his 8th birthday, Max's parents began to give him jobs in the theater, prompting actors during performances, keeping track of props, even sometimes appearing on stage if a child was needed as background for a scene. He missed many days of school, but he was smart enough to progress from year to year at the normal rate. After his 10th birthday, his parents sometimes took Max with them when they traveled. Then he was absent not only for rehearsals or after late performances, but also because he was on the road, visiting distant cities with the Starling Theatrical Company. Max could understand why the other boys and the teachers liked him less and less each year. You can't know a lot of plays well, some of them written by William Shakespeare, without getting a good understanding of how and why people do what they do. But he wouldn't have changed his life for anything their friendship and approval had to offer. His parents were the most fascinating people he knew. He never tired of their performances, on the stage or out on a street or even in their own kitchen. Max didn't want to be an actor, although he could carry off a minor role given the right costume. He thought that just as his eyes were a mixture of gray and black and brown that made a new, as yet unnamed and possibly unpleasant color, He himself was a mix of their two
Sample complete. Ready to continue?